This is the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show, Series 6, Episode 26. Stop, start, stutter. If you're a fast bowler and you might have a problem with pitching the ball in the right place, it could be to do with your run-up. We have a question this week which is exactly to do with that. Find out the team's answer to that particular problem on the show. We also talk about camps and academies and how to get the most out of them, whether you're a coach or a player. And we help a leg spinner with bowling plans. Welcome back to the show, Elvis. All that and more coming up on this week's Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. Hello again and welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is your guide to better cricket, no matter who you are in the world and no matter where you are. And speaking of who I am and where I am, I'm David Hinchcliffe. I look after things here and I'm looking out on a beautiful sunny morning here in Glasgow, which is always welcome. And I'm joined in conversation today by two very fine cricket coaches. The first is Mark Garraway, who is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Mealfield School. Good morning, Garras.
Good morning.
If you're listening to this in the evening or the afternoon, I apologise for that, but this is an early recording, so we're in a morning mood. I don't know if the coffee's at the ready, is it, Garras?
It's definitely on the go. It is definitely morning. I can confirm that.
And good morning also to the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavis.
Hello there.
And what's your morning drink?
I'm actually straight water. I don't drink tea or coffee, I'm afraid. So it's straight malt water or occasionally milk.
Milk.
Yeah, oh. but no hot drinks for me. No.
Yeah. Well, you're one of those people who just doesn't like a hot drink. That's always strange to me. I'd have a cup of tea if it was 35 degrees.
I'd go for a hot chocolate, but unfortunately, no tea or coffee.
Okay. Well, now we've got that important information out of the way. Let's talk a little bit more about cricket. What we're doing this week at the moment at the West of Scotland Cricket Club is having our summer coaching camp, and that is great fun for all the kids involved. There's a big range of kids in terms of age and in terms of ability, which is a challenge for a coach, and I guess a challenge for the players as well. You know, that it's a different environment for them. So I wanted to get your experiences of that, because around the world these kind of academies and camps happen all the time, don't they, where you get guys coming in who have different experiences and different levels of ability and different ages. So what's your thoughts on these kind of camps and academies, Garras, and is there any way of helping people get the best out of them, whether they're the coach or the player?
Well, firstly, I think they're absolutely brilliant, because in our time now, which is beginning to get to that summer holiday time of year, lots of camps spring up all over the place. And it's just great to see so many kids playing cricket. And I know that that's replicated probably even more so in the subcontinent than it is in the UK and in South Africa and in Australia. But it's just brilliant to see everybody practicing and playing and loving the game, and new people coming into the game at a young age as well. And with that comes the challenge, I suppose, of looking after everybody, which is what you're talking about here. And I think in the most extreme ways, when we run a super skills academy over in Sardinia, we're often got some county players, so county age group players across with, and we've got some 3 or 4 year olds that are just having their first experience of it. And I think the first rule really is to split those people up as best you can. Obviously, that's reliant on your coach numbers as much as anything. But generally, I would always go off with the little ones and try and give them as much of a good start in cricket as possible, getting them just hitting the ball, not too much technical input, get them chasing after the ball, get them learning how to bowl and how to interact with each other. Those are the things that mattered. And I've played a lot of small-sided games and really sort of a games for understanding approach to try and teach them through the week or the time that we've got together through actually practically having a go at the game. And then for the senior ones, obviously, you know, if you've got another coach there with you, you can split them up and put them over to one side, ascertain where each one of them are. And really, you've got to go with the sort of middle of the group to me, you get the ones that haven't had so much experience or aren't quite as good at that present moment in time, and you get them up to speed with the middle of the group. And then equally, you're probably going to have to just be a bit patient and ask the guys at the top end who have played a lot more to be a bit patient. I think the other thing to do as well is to do little masterclasses. So maybe for your best player, one or two players, the ones that have played the most, do a little 20-minute session, maybe a two-on-one session at the end, just to make sure that you're hitting all of their key notes as well. But yeah, I mean, it's great that everybody's doing the cricket camps, but we just need to be a bit strategic, I suppose, about how to develop each one, because you don't want anybody to go away without having a great experience.
Lavers, what kind of frame of mind would you like players to come to for these kind of camps? Because a lot of the time, I guess, players will turn up and they'll say, right, what next? But is there a frame of mind you would like to see players turn up at, or is it just like, let's all have some fun and go home?
Yeah, it's quite difficult because a lot of players will come up with different expectations. So they'll be attending with different goals in their mind that they want to set and things that they want to achieve. And as Gareth has mentioned there, there'll be people of varied abilities. So it's actually managing those ambitions for the week or for the few days or whatever you may have. Can be quite difficult, but as long as people turn up with a bit of enthusiasm and an open mind to how the process is gonna run, I think you can generally find that most cricketers will get something from a week or however much time you actually have to spend with them. It is a difficult process because some players are gonna be stuck slightly below their level at times, so. Finding a way to infuse these ones and make sure they're still aware there's going to be an opportunity. And Gareth says you can run a little 20-minute masterclass here and there, which is a little personal thing to them and might be something that they can look forward to throughout the day. Also, it's an opportunity to give them leadership skills. And you might say to some of the more advanced players for a day that, actually, I want you to be kind of my support a little bit as well, and I want you to set an example. I want you to be a leader, and you almost bring them onto your side. It makes them feel a little bit bigger and a little bit stronger almost, that they know that they're there and they're helping you as well as being on the course. And that's a good way for them to try and approach it, knowing that they've been identified as one of the strong cricketers. Gives them a little bit of a boost. And when they know they've got that little bit of personal time coming with you later on in the day or whatever it may be, then they know they can do their learning there. So, yeah, an open mind and plenty of enthusiasm is a pretty good start.
I think it's important to do that yourself as well. I'll tell you a story of my own, something that I learned from one of the camps earlier in the week. We were playing a game of cricket rounders, which is a great game to get all kind of ages and abilities, just having a bit of a run around and a bat and a field and all the rest of it. And there was one young lad, he's 9 years old. He hasn't really got the idea that you have to stop at a base if you might get run out. So I said to when it was his turn to bat again, I said, "Don't worry, I'll run round with you this time, and we'll make sure that you are, you know, you get all the way round, and we'll stop at the relevant base when we get to the relevant base." So he smashed it out into the leg side, and we ran, and he absolutely headed to first base, and I looked, and it was still miles out. And he wasn't going to stop. He was going to try and run all the way around like he did every time. And so he started sprinting towards second base. And I saw it was miles away. And I thought, oh, great. You know, we'll get to second base here. So I ran along with him and looked up and saw the girl who was standing at second base standing there with her hand up saying, no, no, no. And I said, quick run. You'll easily make it. Quick run. And she didn't. And the throw came in. And me and the boy, who I was meant to be helping with his running, will run out by miles.
leave them to it next time.
Yeah, so the lesson there is maybe ask them to work it out for themselves rather than think that you know best, because it's not always the case. If you've got a determined girl standing at second base, she's not going to move no matter what the coach says. Okay, let's wrap up this section with the yes-no round. Three questions that can only be answered yes or no, no matter how much more that the team want to say. I've got the questions. Let's get going. First question. The only way to experience perfection is through failing.
Yes.
Yes.
Second question. Intent is better than volume.
Yes.
No.
Third question. England will win the Ashes.
No.
No.
Oh, no. Okay, so we are going to enter into the mailbag. Dig out a couple of questions. And they're sent in by listeners to this show or readers to the Pitch Vision Academy website. We pick a question from the two that are picked out, and we choose a winner who wins a prize of an online coaching course courtesy of Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. So the first questioner this week is our friend Elvis. And Elvis has got another sort of leg spin kind of related question, but maybe we can spread it out a little bit more. And Elvis says, I'm interested to hear about your thoughts on bowling plans. How do you go about analysing a batsman and coming up with plans for him, particularly as a leg spinner? So, Lavers, making plans.
Yeah, it's good fun, I think. It's a good opportunity. It's a good challenge for players in the group to have a little bit of discussion. And I think it's a really interesting way to keep you on your toes and get everyone involved. Because often the players can just let the game drift along, and there's so much you can be doing if you're aware of the impact that can be made just by a simple plan. So, good question. I first of all spend a lot of time looking at the batter. So first of all, thinking about the game situation, then looking at the batter and working out how he's going to apply his particular set of skills to the situation in front of us. So, there are some simple things you can look at first of all. So we're going to look at how does a batter swing the bat? So what sort of line does it come down on? How does the face open and close? How does a batter move? So how can they position themselves in relation to the ball? Do they get close to it? Do they generally move straight down the line of the stumps, or do they even open up and create a lot of space? How balanced are they at the crease? So there are a number of different variables you can look at very simply, which are going to affect how he's going to be able to play the shot. So usually that's how I would start, by thinking about how the batter's able to move. Then we're going to think about how the ball and the pitch are going to work together. So as a leg spinner in this case for Elvis, is there any turn or is there any bounce, or is there any opportunity to move the ball off the surface? And if there is, how can we tie that up with a potential strength or weakness of the batter to allow that to make a mistake, or for us to try and get through them somehow? So there are some very simple plans you might look at which could work for you as a leg spinner especially, and there's some very, very complicated ones. Very simply, if you've got a pitch that's turning, you might be thinking of creating spaces for the batsman to attack and score, whether that's hitting boundaries or hitting ones. And you're looking to offer him opportunities to score where it can actually help you as a fielding side. So, commonplace for a leg spinner is opening up mid-wicket for the single. So there's an opportunity to score a kind of low success shot, which is just finding a single, but in a high-risk area, just by playing across the line and we're closing the face. So by bowling on a line and a length that encourages that is a good way of just encouraging a shot to go into the leg side. Obviously, that can then be partied up with how you feel a wicket could come, and that might be a catch from leading edge, extra cover, or a catch at the slip. So very simple. Similarly, again, it's opening up gaps and opening up opportunities for players to score on the offside, again, bringing the wicketkeeper or the slip into game. So some very simple things based on whether the pitch is turning and bouncing or not will start you off. They're very much short-term plans, so they're probably based on an immediate ball. The other way you can think about your plans is things that are a little bit more long-term, so built up over a series of three or four balls or two or three overs even. As a leg spinner, again, the easy one to look at is Shane Warne, who was very famous for a number of plans which people at the time didn't seem to be able to pick up on, but were fantastic to look back on. And you can see a few of them over the years to the Daryl Cunlands and Alex Stewarts of the world, who have fallen for the feed of the old cut shot from Shane Warne, where he's dragged the ball slightly short and been cut out to the boundary, and he's been happy to give up four runs. And then he's followed that up a ball or two balls later with another cut shot again, and he's starting to give the batsman that little bit of confidence that they can get back and across and play the ball away, and then finally followed it with a flipper, which looks like a back of a length ball, but then hurries onto them. So the plans can be very simple, and they can be something that occur in the moment with a single delivery, or the plans can be things that are built over three or four balls. So first of all, I'll be thinking, are the conditions going to allow me to get an instant wicket, or are the conditions going to have to force me into a slightly more long-term plan? So that's probably a starting point for me.
Gareth, I guess the danger of planning as well is that you can do it too much. You can spend so much time thinking about every possibility that you forget that sometimes the simplest answer is also the most effective one. So you have to get that balance right, don't you?
You certainly do. And I think with leg spinners, a lot of the time, the plan shouldn't necessarily shift to the batter until you've got your plan for yourself. I mean, coming across a batter, and you might see, if you're lucky, you might see a batter twice in 1 year, an opposition batter twice in 1 year. But ultimately, you're going to bowl a lot of balls in nets, you're going to bowl a lot of balls out in matches, and you'll get a much better feel for what your plan needs to be. You know, where do you get scored off? Where are you most effective? So Graham Smith once said to me, it's great that people do all this planning for the opposition, but that's not good enough until you know yourself and you know your own game well enough. So before you get funky, get really authentic with what you are yourself and how you go about your business. Then you can sort of make some other little plans specifically around the batter, which just change it fractionally, you know. But I think if there's any bowling style that needs to get to understand how they work themselves, it's leg spinners. And Shane Warne was a fantastic leg spinner, but we've been on the search for one for a long time since he retired nearly 10 years ago from Test cricket. And that shows how difficult the art of leg spin is. So I would say know yourself first, and then when you've got that absolutely spot on, then transfer some plans across into the individual batters that you come up against. But, you know, from the leg spinners that I've played with, the dismissals are fairly consistent. You know, the wicketkeeper, the slips come into play. Guy offside drive comes into play, and effectively you're trying to make, as Sam said, by opening gaps, you're trying to make somebody hit the ball into leg side areas, you know, against the spin, really, in order to get to get your wickets. But yeah, know yourself first would be my my key thing. And then the other thing from captaining leg spinners is, as the wicket deteriorates or the leg spinner comes into play because the ball spins more, it's a time where you can actually give him a bit of cover as well. So you can encourage him to put everything into it to get that ball to spin. So having in outfields are really important. When the ball does start to spin, I think people tend to over-attack a little bit when they see the ball spinning. And then what that tends to do from when you put those fields into place is it makes people end up bowling defensively because they don't want to go for runs. Well, if you keep that slip in, you keep the man in on the drive, maybe even two men on a drive, and then yet have people out on the boundary to defend the shorter ball or the full toss or whatever when you're asking somebody to spin the ball square and to win you a game is also a good idea. So, yeah, think about gaps, think about in outfields, but more importantly, understand yourself first.
And you can even do that kind of attacking thing in shorter format cricket or limited over format cricket, can't you? You know, wickets slow the run rate quicker than anything else. So if you can sneak a slip in or a catcher in front of the wicket in when you've got a leggy on, then that's going to be to your great advantage if the leggy does what you want him to do, which is find the edge of the bat or getting somebody to drive a little bit on the up.
Yeah, and also it can affect the batter, can't it? You know, having a slip in and a man on the drive with everybody else out or holding the edge of a circle makes people think differently, because it can get a bit bog standard, can't it, playing in 2020 cricket and 50 over cricket. We can get a little bit staid in our approaches, and you go through that, you know, we're not seeing quite so much of it nowadays, fortunately, but you go through that period where there's just loads of ones, and it used to frustrate me that we weren't trying to get wickets in that period, you know, and people in all sorts of teams were trying to get wickets. In fact, we had a conversation with Rajasthan Royals a few years ago when I was doing some stuff with them about that. They were telling me how successful they'd been with two spinners, one of which was Shane Warne, in the middle of a 2020 game. They called the middle eight, they were the best in the competition. Well, they were the best at keeping the runs down, so they went just under everybody else in terms of the runs that they were letting go in that period of the game. But they weren't getting any wickets, even with the great Shane Warne bowling. They weren't picking up wickets, and that was damaging them in the last eight overs of a game, you know, because there were so many wickets left in the hutch that people were just having a massive whoop at everybody else, and they were losing the game as a consequence. So what we did was encourage them to be a bit more attacking in that middle eight overs, encourage them to use different types of bowlers, and just to think outside the box to make it more difficult for the batter just to navigate their way through that eight-over period without any damage to a wickets column. So I think you're absolutely right on that. You can use those types of tactics in any format of cricket, and I think we're beginning to see that in 50-over cricket more and more so now.
And as a cautionary tale, I know it's quite an old story, but I think it's still a good cautionary tale. There's the story of W.G. Grace's brother, E.M. Grace, who once played a match where he hit everything to the leg side until they'd moved as many fielders as possible across to the leg side, in which he then started smashing everything across to the offside. So batsmen can have plans as well. So be careful you don't get too tied up in your plans. It's important to have them, and it's important to work on them, but it's also important to remember that in the heat of battle, things can change very quickly. The next question is from Yogesh. Yogesh says, "Hello, I've been bowling short balls. I found out the reason for that is that I jump into my delivery stride too early and often don't use the crease, and I bowl from a step behind the popping crease. Whenever I jump at the right point and land on the popping crease, I'm able to bowl where I intend to. Can you tell me how to consistently jump from the correct point? Are there any drills for that?"
I don't think it's so much of drills. I think it's more awareness, really. And the consistency of where you put your foot down first as you start your run-up is very, very important. And I've done quite a lot of work this year with a guy called John Trower, who was Steve Backley, the javelin thrower's coach. And, you know, it's well documented that the mechanics of javelin throwing and fast bowling have got some, you know, elements that transfer across. But one of the things that a lot of the time these people don't look at is the importance of a run-up in both of those disciplines. And we had a bowler at school that was doing very similar thing to you, Yogesh. And it wasn't so much about where he put his foot. He made sure he hit his mark every single time. But what we noticed was that his first stride was quite springy, was quite plyometric, it was quite boundy. And the consistency of that was very different every single time. And the way that we measured that was to get him on a rainy day to bowl in spikes on an outfield where we could see the indentation. So we videoed it, and we saw him hit his mark every time, but his next foot, so he hit his mark with his left foot, and his right foot would hit the ground, and it would vary by about a foot and a half, right, over the course of a three-over spell. So it was something that we wanted to look at. I'd get a mechanism leading into him hitting his marker, which meant that he would then hit his marker and then hit his next stride in a consistent fashion. Because if you don't get your first stride right, and that's often the one, as you come out the blocks, I suppose, the one that is easiest to throw off, then obviously that's going to have a knock-on effect by the time you get up to the popping crease. The other thing is, if you get that first bit right, then you're not having to compensate in your follow-up strides on the way into your bound as well. There's nothing worse than going into your bound, into your jump gather, and find that you're having to adjust at that point. You want to be adjusting way back. And in fact, you don't want to have to be adjusting at all. So if I look at the best run-ups down history, and somebody who I thought had an incredibly consistent run-up was somebody like Richard Hadley. He would literally make, over the course of a test match, make big indentations or wear down patches on the way to a wicket. Dennis Lilly would do the same. And we see a number of bowlers in world cricket. Glenn McGrath would do that as well. And you'd see how consistent their first stride was, which then would lead to the rest of it working in the right sort of way. So the first thing I would say is to have a look at A, hitting your marker. And I'm sure you're doing that because most people do. But if you're not, then that could be your first port of call. And secondly, what's happening in your first stride? Because if you don't get your first stride right, as John Troyer, the great javelin coach, would say, then it'll have knock-on effects further up. That knock-on effect to me sounds like it's causing you to be bowling from a little bit back in the crease, which then, of course, affects your length. So have a go at that, I'd suggest.
And there's an added complexity, Lev, as you mentioned this the other week, didn't you? There's an added complexity that people's run-ups are going to change because of where you're running up to, the raising up of the square or going down a hill or going up a hill.
Yeah, we actually had a really interesting game on Monday where we were playing in a national quarter-final, and the pitch was perfectly flat, or the wicket was perfectly flat, but the elevation from one end to the boundary and the other end to the boundary was significant. So one bowler was running downhill and probably dropping 2 or 3 feet in their run-up, and the other guy was running uphill. And you've got that all the time. There's going to be the variation of the slope of the approach up or down, and there's going to be that occasional lift as you move into this onto the square, and there's that build-up that's created over the years of the topsoil that's now creating a slight mound as you approach the square. And there are other variabilities as well of how smooth the ground is, how firm the ground is, and they're all going to have an effect, and they're all going to change throughout the year as the conditions develop, as the sun gets hotter and the soil underfoot changes. So these are all things you've got to try and be aware of. But one thing that we always come back to is how key a skill of adaptability is to us as cricketers. And the more we can understand our own action or understand our run-up or our approach, the more we're likely to be able to adapt it to any scenario that's given to us. So that adaptability is a really, really important thing. From a more of a feel perspective, I've worked with quite a few bowlers who've found it quite difficult to bowl with or without the umpire, whichever way you look at it, because they get that feeling for the umpire being in a specific position, and they like their takeoff to be associated with an umpire in place. So that's one thing to also consider, is how your takeoff position or how your movement or how your attack of the crease, as it were, changes based on whether you're in training or whether you're in a match, and whether you put an umpire in a certain position or they've just stood where they want to. So on top of the physicality of how you start and how you move and try to be as consistent as possible, try and get someone or something positioned in that same place every time, whether it's in a match situation or it's in a training situation, because that might just give you that feel. And even though you're looking at the pitch or at the stumps or where you're looking to bowl, that peripheral vision will still have the umpire, who'll be quite a significant figure and probably more prominent than the stumps in your peripheral vision, because the stumps are a lot lower down and slightly further away. So try and be consistent in how you place the umpire or place someone. And a lot of times at school, it might be a simple thing like placing one of the big duffel bags or putting something else there, just so there is something that is marking that place or position of the umpire. So we still have that reference, that point of reference for our approach and our takeoff before we actually get to bowling the ball.
There's a potential product for pitch vision, a dummy umpire.
A dummy umpire, there you
An
go.
Umpire scarecrow. You press, if it's an LBW appeal, you press the button and pitch vision tells you whether it hit the stumps, and then he raises his finger.
There you go. Job done. He can have a little computer screen in his back.
I'll put it to the chief executive as soon as possible. So first time on the show, that is 60 seconds on the clock. One member of the team who gets to chat about anything they want uninterrupted for the full minute. This week it's Mark Garraway. Gareth, over to you.
I was in some interviews the other day, and we had a number of really good coaches sitting in front of us and talking to us about what they do and whether they're ready to go on to the next level of coaching within the ECB and coaching courses within the ECB. And I was interested in a number of their answers, but one of the things that started to come up throughout the day was people talking about their players. So my player this and my players do that. And I find that quite interesting language. So every time I heard it, I asked them, are they your players or are they the players that you work with? because I think that's a very important thing to distinguish. I mean, I don't know about Sam, but I think my role within anybody's development is to almost make them self-reliant when they're out in the middle when they're playing, because I'm not going to be there standing at the end of their mark. I'm not going to be keeping wicket, standing next to a wicketkeeper when they just miss a stump, and I'm not going to be there standing next to them when they're backing up or when they're facing somebody who's bowling the ball quick or bowling the ball with a great deal of lateral movement. So they've got to be able to stand on their own 2 feet. And I'm, you know what I'm like on language. But to me, when you talk about my players, it's quite restrictive, because when you, you know, they're almost reliant on you. And also, you've got to remember that they're going to be playing heck of a lot of cricket in other environments. Anybody who's any good will have a number of different coaches. So I just think it's interesting language. And it goes back to my old adage that if we talk in the right language to people, then we facilitate some decent behaviours. And I wonder whether my players is a better statement, or whether, in fact, the players that I work with is a better statement.
And that is the end of the show for another week. Before we go, we're just going to decide on a couple of things. The first of those things is the winner of this week's competition. So the questions available this week for the prize of the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy, pitchvision.com, are Elvis's question about bowling plans and Yogesh's question about his leap to the crease. So which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I think Yogesh's questions are a really good one, because I reckon there's a few people out there would be experiencing similar things. And in Sam's answer, I think there were some brilliant elements to it around the variability of run-ups and what can affect them and how you can counteract that. And then looking at John Troa's point in my answer about getting that starting point right and that first stride right. So hopefully in there, Yogesh, you've got some good advice that will take you forward.
Congratulations, Yogesh. And there will be people listening who might have their own cricket-related problems and they want to get an answer, and maybe they want to win that prize as well of the online coaching course. So, Gareth, if they wanted to send in their question to us and have that chance, what would they need to do?
They could give us a call on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email at coach@pitchvision.com.
That's correct. The social media is also available. Twitter is at pitchvisionacad. And Facebook can be found at facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy. If you want to listen to this show every week, and please do if you like it, then you can subscribe in any podcast app that you care to mention, and there's plenty of them available on lots of different formats, mobile formats, or you can go to pitchvision.com/academy and you can click on the podcast link there. You've got all the show notes, you've got a way of streaming the show from your computer, you can download the show onto your computer, or you can subscribe to the RSS feed there. It's all there, all in one place. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, guys.